Hi, today is September 23rd, 2017. This is Mobius Podcast number 223. And it's kind of the Apple Watch iPhone 8 edition part 2.
Yeah, sort of the wrap up now that they've been in the wild for a week.
Well, iOS has been in the wild for a week.
The knowledge of the phones has been in the wild for a week, and the phones themselves have been in the wild widely for a little over a day. Yeah. But that being said, I think we don't typically see anything too crazy after the public gets it. It's just bugs that come out after that. But the initial impression stuff is what we typically see in the media that we talk about. So.
Yeah. A couple of things to get started before we get to the Apple stuff. One, my U.S. Postal Service informed delivery daily digest started a couple of days ago. It's kind of interesting. So you get a grayscale images of all the envelopes and things that are coming to your home. You know, junk mail and bills and stuff like that. It's kind of nice to have. You get it kind of early in the morning. I'm going to say about, well, not early in the morning, but like before the mail comes. So you get a heads up on what should be in your mailbox when you get home. And I find it kind of handy. Might be kind of interesting someday to go through all the photos and do a, you know, statistical analysis of when junk mail comes and all that kind of stuff. But at any rate, the other one is another part two, and Sprint and T-Mobile are talking about merging again, according to Reuters. They tried once before in 2014, didn't happen because of the antitrust concerns, and I guess the presumption is there's nobody cares about such things anymore. The federal government, and they'll let them through. We'll see. You know, the other interesting thing to note is neither company are owned by Americans anymore, or by the U.S. Sprint is owned by SoftBank, I think, of Japan, and T-Mobile is owned by Deutsche Telekom. So, yeah, it'll be kind of interesting.
Well, we'll see about this. You know, honestly, Sprint and T-Mobile merging, I don't think is going to change the landscape all that much of mobile phone carriers in the U.S., although we might see, unless the new company retains T-Mobile's CEO, I don't think we're going to see as much kind of pushing the industry around like T-Mobile's tried to do over the last couple of years. Yeah. And mostly you could argue that's been for the better. I mean, T-Mobile does something and starts drawing away customers from the other three, and they then do it as well. Depending on your viewpoint, sometimes they do it better, sometimes they do it worse. But we'll have to see. I would think he would be a shoo-in, though, for CEO over Sprint. But
yeah, you know, it's interesting. The other thing that comes to mind is that Sprint and T-Mobile are the main paired carriers for Google Fi. So, you know, from Google's point of view, I guess it makes they now have to deal with one fewer entity if that merger goes through, which might simplify things. One wonders, though, you know, Sprint has some kind of unlimited plan for, I don't know, $100 a month or something, and T-Mobile has that with, like, free video delivery of certain video channels. It'll be interesting to see what their combined offerings are, or if they reduce it because now there's, you know, less competition. And And they will have a pretty big footprint if they combine.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be interesting. And I kind of debated on whether or not to bring this up because it's probably not politically correct. But I'll just say it. I find it interesting that 70 years after World War II ended, Japan and Germany might combine again too. Create a juggernaut in the U.S., but anyway.
That's a very interesting observation. I hadn't thought about that, but
there it is.
Yeah, there it is.
Okay, politically correct or not, I apologize to those who are offended. I myself am Japanese-American, so half of me, you know, my half of the story is not it's not offensive to me.
Well, I have a quarter German blood in me, so, you know... So we're like 5/8 okay.
Yeah.
With this.
Yeah. So I assume you're not too offended either. So anyway,
I don't think they're going to be taking over Verizon and Sprint anytime soon. So
yeah. Although, you know, Verizon, I don't know what the Verizon Wireless story is right now, but they used to be half owned by Vodafone. which is a German-based
company. Yeah, and they've gotten out of that.
Split, though, right? That's split.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, it turns out that John pre-ordered the Apple Watch Series 3. Did you order the LTE version? I forget.
I did order the LTE version and the stainless steel version, so mine is not going to show up until sometime between October 6th and October 13th, according to Apple at this point.
Okay, so let me tell you an interesting story. I think you already know this, John. So I did a little bit. I didn't pre-order at all. But I was interested in the watch, and so I did a bit of research. And one of the things I found out is that my current plan, which is a grandfathered plan, cannot add the watch as a service.
Yeah, you had posted something about that after our last podcast.
Right. So I would have to change plans, and there is no current plan that is as cheap as mine. So I would have to end up paying not only $10 a month more for the watch service, but more in general, just to switch to, you know, having an LTE watch. Mm-hmm. So in my frugal, okay, let's call it what it is. I'm a cheapskate. In my cheapskate mind, I'm thinking, how often am I without my phone when I'm not in the house? And the answer is, unless I forget my phone, which has happened, I think, once in the last 15 years, the answer is never. So, you know, even when I walk and things like that, I have no problems carrying my phone. I used to carry a digital camera and a phone when I used to walk frequently in the old days. So I said, I'll save myself some money. I'll avoid having to change my carrier's plan. And I walked into the Apple store yesterday. There's magical words you have to ask. You have to utter, by the way, to get a watch. You have to say, can I buy a watch here? Apparently, they say yes. That's it. You're done.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked to the local Apple store, or actually I drove to the local Apple store, walked in. There was a line, by the way, outside of the store. A little tiny line, like two or three people. So I went over to that line and asked them what was going on and uttered those magic words. And they said, do you know what you want? And I kind of told them what I wanted. Said, oh, okay, go ahead, go in. Somebody will help you. And so I walked out with the Apple Watch Series 3 non-LTE.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting. I think it's harder to use than my Android Wear watch.
Well, you know, you had mentioned before we started podcasting that you were interested in my thoughts on Apple Watch versus Pebble, and you've got your thoughts on Apple Watch versus Android Wear.
Right.
And I do think, so what specifically are you finding harder with Apple Watch?
Well, to begin with, the setup takes like forever. I think it took like 10 minutes for the watch to sync up with my phone. Whereas Android, where it syncs in like 5 seconds, you know, you hit the button. Is this the watch? Yes. Okay, you're good.
Yeah, that is true. The Apple Watch setup does take, in some cases, even longer than 10 minutes. I've seen it. So, yeah.
Go ahead.
And I don't really know why that is. I don't know if it's because Apple loads everything you could possibly think it needs on there or what it's doing. But yeah, it takes a while.
Yeah, and by the way, an FYI, when it came to the question of do you want me to install all the apps that are available for the watch, I said no. So I didn't install any apps from my, you know, Apple Watch compatible apps on my phone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if people say, well, that's because it was installing all the apps, the answer is no, it wasn't. So I don't know what it was doing. The other thing is just sort of just using it, you know, just navigating. Using the crown and the button, and I don't know what to call those two. I guess crown and button's fine. Seems a lot more complicated than on the Android Wear, which just has one button or a touchscreen. I hardly ever used a button, I think. And just navigating around, trying to figure out how to, you know, get out of an app. I guess you just press the button.
Mm-hmm.
Seems a lot more complicated to me.
Now, I know in the past when I've used Android Wear on a friend's watch, I thought it was a little bit more complicated than my Apple Watch. So it might just be what you're familiar with.
Could be.
You know, and thinking about the Pebble, when I used Pebble years ago before the Apple Watch. The Pebble versus the Apple Watch, the comparison I'd make would be a Palm Pilot versus a Windows mobile or iPad. You know, it's sort of the Pebble always felt a little bit primitive compared to what I would see on my Apple Watch. So I think if you think about it that way, the Pebble was easy to use, but not as many features. I think the Apple Watch, the features are pretty easy. Maybe you will after you've played with it for a while. But I think it's really just what you get used to.
Okay. Anyway, a couple of things, you know, just even the app. It was interesting. The Apple person who was the Apple Store person who was helping me. One of the things I asked him was, he showed me how to change the watch face on the watch, and I said, "Can you do it from the app?" And he said, "No, you can modify it from the app, but you can't change it." But I found out you can change it from the app. You just hit the sync button. So that was kind of interesting. The app, maybe because it does more. The app, my watch app, is a lot more busy than the Android Wear app, I think, anyway.
Well, I did notice that you have the most busy watch face that you have installed right now is the modular, where you can throw really any information you want on that watch face.
Yeah.
I do get annoyed that there isn't a watch face, in my opinion, that has a happy medium between a lot of information and a very minimal, nice interface.
You know what? Well, I don't know about a nice interface, but I found that the custom photo watch face lets you add like two things, one above the time and one below the time, and that's kind of a happy medium to me. I've been using that one.
I'd like one or two more complications on that face.
Yeah.
That I could turn on and off. Maybe the corners. You know, there's other faces where the four corners are around an analog watch face, and I think those work pretty well, but the custom photo one seems like it still needs one or two more complications.
Right. Now, I also noticed that I don't think this app was on my phone until I got the watch, and the Apple Activity app
got added. I think that only does happen when the watch is there.
Maybe when it's activated, maybe, is what I'm looking for. Well, I guess I should turn this off. Daily coaching, goal completion, special challenges.
You're not interested in any coaching.
No,
or any...
No. I'm too old to be coached.
Mine has been trying to coach me.
Stand reminders. That's turning turned off right now. Okay. Didn't you tell me you were lecturing and you were standing and it told you to stand?
Yeah. I apparently wasn't moving enough. although now I've noticed that I move a lot more in the last year or two wandering around classrooms, so it hasn't bothered me about that.
Okay. Now the other thing, this is not a comparison in Android Wear, but just an observation. The apps are not, let me backtrack a little bit. The apps on Android Wear are terrible. And generally speaking, I don't use any third-party apps on my Android Wear app watch. Because they're either A, terrible, and I'm thinking of you, I think, BBC News. That app was just, it would, half the time it wouldn't sync with the news, and it would say some kind of failure message, and so I just got rid of that. But it seems like just using the apps is non-intuitive, or it doesn't tell me enough in the information on the web. So that was kind of annoying. So, for example, I loaded my local drugstore, the CVS app, I think it was. And I was hoping it would have the CVS loyalty card barcode or something on there, but all it is a medication reminder, so I took that off. And the Starbucks app is really confusing, or the watch app anyway, is really confusing, and I'm not even sure how you pay with that. Do you use a barcode? Do you use the NFC kind of thing? I don't know. I'll figure it out, I guess.
Yeah, the Starbucks app, you use the barcode.
Okay.
Yeah, just like if you were showing it on your phone.
Right, okay. Thanks. Although it's hard to get to, or at least in mine it is. So that was kind of... Well, maybe I'll try it today, see how it works. I don't know. And I know I've talked to you about this before, but what's your favorite thing on your Apple Watch that's third-party?
I use 1Passwords app quite a bit for one-time codes, so that I don't have to pull out my phone. I can just look up what the code is, especially if I'm logging in on a shared computer where I just need to get into my OneDrive or something like that. Not Foursquare, but Swarm. I'll use it for check-ins. Let's see. The news app, I'll look at what the headlines are on the watch occasionally. That's an Apple app. I honestly think I look at the watch more for the temperature than I do for actual time. That's why I always have the temperature as one of my complications.
Yeah, I just switched back. Well, and that's the other thing, you know. So I switched to, when I switched to the custom photo watch face, one of the options was to change, you know, it's like the time, of course, is there, and one complication is a date, because that seemed useful. And the third complication I wanted was Dark Sky, which is my favorite weather app, which does have a watch, you know, version. So I did it, but it doesn't seem to do anything. That's kind of disappointing. It just says Dark Sky. It doesn't have a temperature or what's going to happen. Or, you know, the app is wonderful. I think it's the best weather app I have, or certainly the one I use the most. One thing I will say I like about the Apple Watch is that my battery level shows up on my phone. So I can easily see the battery level without actually turning on my watch, which I find useful. And as you may recall, John, one of the reasons I switched watches is that my first-gen Moto 360, which is now a little over 2 years old, the battery started pooping out during the day. So, and there's no really good Android Wear option. At any rate, sorry, went on and on. It's been interesting. I've had my watch less than 24 hours and trying to get comfortable. Didn't quite get the band I wanted, but I guess I'll go to Amazon and go find something I like.
Well, I think you'll find it to be more useful as you use it. Especially now, were the notifications on Android Wear reliable for you?
Oh, yeah. They're great.
Okay. Because my notifications on Pebble, that was the biggest difference when I went from Pebble to Apple Watch, was that my notifications reliably came through. So that is kind of a big deal to me. I think it'll be a good evolution for you. It may at some point, and we'll see, make you less sad about your Spotwatch.
Oh, man, you had to say that.
The dreaded Spotwatch word.
Now, one thing I'm wondering about, and maybe you can tell me how this works. So one of my favorite features on Android Wear was that the Google app, you know, the notification part, Google Now, I guess you called it, Google Now, alerted me to traffic incidents and things like that from, I guess, Google Maps or Waze or whatever it was, whatever data it was using while I was driving. So, you know, if I started to slow down, it would say, you know, accident 2 miles, blah, blah, blah. It would pop up on my watch. I could just glance at it safely and continue on. Is there anything similar to that for the Apple Watch? Can I have Google Maps or Apple Maps or somebody, Google Now?
Yeah, you will get notifications if there were a notification that came to the phone. So, you know, occasionally Apple will do the predictive things like, oh, it's going to take 5 minutes to get to your destination before you leave, that sort of thing. What I really enjoy using it for is navigation in a city that I'm not used to.
Walking.
And also, a few months ago, I was in Washington, and I had my phone just kind of sitting on charge in the console of the rental vehicle I had. I just was basically navigating around Washington, D.C. by glancing at my watch and going, okay, turn in 500 feet. You know, turn in 2 miles, okay, it doesn't matter what lane I'm in for a little bit. You know, basically, and I actually had someone comment go, wow, you know Washington really well. And I said, oh, you know, it's helpful when the directions are right on my wrist. I can just look over and see which way I need to go. So that is a nice feature. And I did notice this week that WatchOS 4, I was listening to music on my iPhone.
Yeah.
And had my AirPods in, I was listening to music. And I happened to glance at my watch, and it was showing the music app on the watch. So I could easily pause or switch tracks.
Oh, is that new?
I think it is. I've never noticed the watch doing that automatically before, which makes me feel like I should remap the AirPods instead of double tap the start and stop to be back to Siri, because the whole reason I had start and stop was I needed a quick way to start or stop, but if my watch is going to show me that, I can just look over, tap the watch, and be done with it.
Yeah, you know, and so funny you should mention that, because I was wondering about that. So I was surprised yesterday as I was driving home with watch, you know, securely on my wrist. Now, I almost always drive listening to either a podcast or Audible, and in neither case do I, you know, is it an Apple app, right? I use, what's the podcast app I use? Overcast to listen to podcasts, because Apple's podcast app continues to deteriorate and disgust me.
Yep, I have Overcast as well.
And I use Audible to listen to audiobooks. So I'm listening to Audible coming home from the Apple store with my watch on. And I noticed that the audio controls on my watch. And I was a little surprised that the third-party audio controls on my watch. But I now assume that it's because all audio apps use a common audio control API. Mm-hmm. And so it just appears regardless of what audio app you're using. But that was kind of interesting. So, like you said, I could pause and fast forward and all that kind of stuff from the watch.
Yeah, you know, which makes it nice. I will say that there are times when I'm teaching, I usually have my phone sitting on the lectern and I'll be wandering around the room. There are times when my phone will ring.
Yeah.
Like maybe once every few weeks I'll not have it on silent. And my students do get a kick out of me looking at my watch and hitting reject, and the phone stops ringing, you know, a classroom away. That was a much bigger deal 2 years ago when not all of them had Apple Watches. But now a lot of my students and even my colleagues are buying Apple Watches, which I think is really interesting compared to how many tech journalists we still hear talk about how the Apple Watch is a horrible failure.
Yeah, nobody's buying it.
Exactly.
Except all those people that are in the Apple store I was in yesterday.
Yeah, that's why an 18-year-old undergrad in my class has an Apple Watch, because nobody's buying this thing other than, you know,
right,
weird geek undergrad that used to wander around with giant computers strapped to their wrist, you know.
And that's one other thing I should mention. I was really surprised that the 42-millimeter Apple Watches look smaller than my Moto 360. Mm-hmm. I thought it'd be bigger, but I don't know. By the way, speaking of Siri, Siri now speaks on the Apple Watch Series 3. Well, I don't know if it's just
your watch.
Huh? Will it speak on yours with upgrade?
Nope. Siri's still silent on the original Apple Watches.
And the other the thing I noticed is it's really slow. So compared to asking a question on Amazon Echo, and I won't use the trigger word, but, you know, if you ask a question of the Amazon Echo, it's like, boom, it's back at you. Siri is like thinking and thinking and thinking. Okay, let's do a timing test.
You could just raise it up and say, "Hey Siri."
Hey Siri, weather.
Nice weather coming up today. Up to 82 degrees.
Did you hear that?
That was a bit of a pause. Now, do you remember that you don't have to wait between saying "Hey Siri" and weather?
Okay.
You could just say, you know, it's the same thing, but you're right, Alexa. Ooh, I said her name. She is much faster than that. But the Apple Watch, you know, it started out really pokey, a lot of things. And my Series 0, I guess if you want to call the original Apple Watch that, has gotten a lot faster with the watchOS upgrades each year.
Oh.
But,
so you're saying, I shouldn't be grumpy about it?
Well, I'm saying that at least it's not as bad as it used to be.
Okay, so this is an improvement, that delay, that lag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, well, I'll try to get, you know, used to it, I guess. You know, honestly, I hardly ever use it. I just was testing it, and I go, whoa, it's pretty slow. And I can't imagine using it in the real world. It's just...
I have not... The only thing I use Siri for is, ironically, turning off my bedside lamp.
It's a good one.
Because we have the little Belkin, or not the Belkin, but the little iHome outlets on some of the lamps, and that's one of them. And so when my wife and I are ready to go to sleep, I'll tell Siri every night to turn off the bedside lamp, and it surely tells me that the bedside lamp is off.
Okay. Oh, I'll tell you another story about talking to your watch. So my wife has the Series 2, I guess you call it, or the second generation. And she didn't realize that you could use it to send text messages. So I demonstrated it to her by sending a text message to our daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Except, you know, of course, I'm showing it to my wife. So I kept talking after I thought I'd sent a message to my daughter. So it's got all my commentary on the text message. So I had to send a second message to our daughter saying, you can just ignore all that editorial comments about, you know, see it works, or, you know, whatever it is I say.
It works.
Yeah. Anywho. Okay. Did you order an iPhone? My recollection is you did not.
No, I did not. I am getting more and more interested in the iPhone 10. Okay. And, man, the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus, they seem to be real snorers this year. There's not many people who are really excited about them, it seems, because the 10 is on the horizon.
On the other hand, this firm website called DxO Mark, and I guess there's some kind of like camera buff site, says the 8 Plus is the best rated smartphone camera ever. So
that doesn't surprise me. I'm not saying there's anything bad about the 8 or the 8 Plus. I'm just saying that whereas in previous years it would have gotten a lot of hype, right. I don't think it will this year because of the iPhone 10. Apple arguably, I think what probably happened is that Apple's plan this year was release all three on the same day to keep the hype, and then manufacturing delays pushed the 10 farther back. Because otherwise, this has been kind of the lowest traditional iPhone launch, I think, in terms of buzz that I've seen in a long time.
Yeah. Now, what is it about the 10 that interests you? Other than the fact that it's the newest and greatest and blah, blah,
It's smaller than my 7 Plus.
Okay.
It's actually, looking at the case size, it's about the same size as my wife's iPhone 6.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, even though I use the 12 South book case, and it's nice having the extra, I guess, two card slots or so that it has with the 7 Plus, I think I'd like to have something a little smaller with a bigger screen, which is the ironic part about it. Bigger screen, smaller phone.
And it's got, you know, and emojis.
Well, yeah, and I will send you many of them.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to those. Yeah. I can see you sending a lot of poop emojis to sundry many and your many friends.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't decided what to do. I've got that, you know, that next whatever thing where I can just turn in my phone and get the new one and continue paying for another 2 years. I haven't decided if I'm going to do that. I am, however, considering getting the Moto. Is it a Motorola? Yeah, I guess so. The Motorola One G4 or whatever it's called, that is now officially supported by Google Fi.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like $399, which is pretty affordable compared to, you know, like the rumored $1,000 or $900 for the new Pixel 2 devices. So, speaking of that, you know, I don't have it in our run-up, but so Google kind of acqui-hired part of HTC.
Yeah, that was interesting.
That was a weird one. So they didn't buy HTC, but they are...
They just bought pieces of HTC they liked.
Yeah, the smartphone piece.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what that leaves. And apparently HTC is going to come out with phones of their own, too. So that's really confusing to me. I don't see what's going on there. So how can you send off your best people and... Well, anyway...
Well, it can happen. I mean, HTC then, as HTC, becomes Huawei. You know?
Yeah.
The phone is acceptable. It's okay, but it's not a flagship.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I might buy that Motorola. I'm pretty happy with the Nexus 6, which is also a Motorola design. And I suspect I'd be happy with the GX4 or whatever it's called, One X4.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly, I want a new phone so I can run Oreo. Nexus 6 won't upgrade to Oreo. In fact, it won't even upgrade to Nougat 7.1. I think I'm stuck on 7.0. But yeah, that was kind of neat. You know, have you run into any problems with iOS 11 since you upgraded? The one I wanted to mention is on my 7 Plus, When I wake the phone up from sleep, you know, just kind of pick it up and you know, hit my thumbprint, it's often in landscape mode, even if I'm holding it portrait, and it'll be stuck there for a while. Have you run into
so
that?
I have not actually had any issues like that.
Okay.
So, but I do recall having a weird issue like that with one of my pluses, whether it was the 7 Plus or the 6 Plus, right after it was, right after the update was released. I don't know if it was the iOS 10 or the iOS 9 update.
Okay.
So I think there might be some sort of calibration issue there that hopefully it's clearing up. But I have not had really any problems with anything on my devices. Now, there is the Outlook 365 bug that is plaguing Apple Mail right now, but I don't use Apple Mail anymore. I use Outlook on my iPhone, so I've had no problem with it.
Oh, that reminds me. Speaking of Microsoft and iOS 11, I think the selfie app doesn't work anymore.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I think, let me bring it up. I think if you bring it up, and yeah, it says, please give permission to access your photo library in settings, Microsoft Selfie Photos. Except you can't do that. Hmm. I mean, you can go to permissions and, you know, go to Microsoft Selfie, but there's no option for you to change. So, or, you know, that, well, there is an option, but you know, it's already set to give it permission and it still doesn't work. So I think Microsoft needs to probably take a look at that and a couple other apps. Well, that's the only app I have. I think there's a couple of apps like that. There's some permission issues and some other third-party apps too that I saw noted in on the web tube somewhere. Have you played with any of the new features of iOS 11 in your iPad Pro? I have not.
I have mostly because some of them are really annoying me. The keyboard layout changes are frustrating.
Oh my gosh, I hate that.
It's going to take me a while to remap. I kind of see how over time it'll get easier, but my brain doesn't work that way right now. So for things like hyphens, I'm right. Still hitting shift and then realizing, oh, I don't need to do that. Or not hitting shift, but hitting the number key sequence. Okay. So yeah, that's one thing. And then it really took me, I was grading an assignment this week where I usually sit in the back of the room and I have my notes on one side of the iPad and the timer app on the other side. And it took me a while to remember or figure out how to pair those together so that I had the split screen view of them. So yeah, it's I like it in some cases. Other things are really annoying me on it.
I want to ask you more about the keyboard. So on the iPhone 7 Plus, the keyboard looks pretty much the same.
Yep.
The on-screen keyboard. But on the Pro, it is visually noisy because it shows everything. It shows the letter, the number, the punctuation, all the time. It's not just when you hit a shift key or function key or whatever.
And that hasn't annoyed me as much as just muscle memory has annoyed me.
Okay.
Because they've moved certain things from where they used to be.
Yeah.
So dollar sign and dash are in different spots.
Yeah, for me, it's just a visual noise problem. You know, I'm looking as I just want to see the letter, really. I just want to see, you know, QWERTY. I don't need to see the punctuation and numbers or whatever that's on those keys as an alternate thing. But anyway, okay, so getting grumpy. Have you played with any of the windowing stuff? I haven't done any of that.
A little bit.
Okay.
But I haven't done any of the drag and drop stuff. I've just done the split screen view like we used to be able to do anyway with it. So.
Right. Okay. And I did want to mention I got the Procreate 4 update, which I think apparently only runs under iOS 11. It is visually different, but not as different as I was afraid it might be. So, you know, I didn't have to like relearn everything. I did have to relearn a couple things. The wet paint mix is not quite what I was hoping for.
You're not able to be as Bob Ross as you want to be.
Bob Ross, no, not so much oils. I don't know who's famous that does watercolors, but I was really hoping to get a real nice watercolor effect.
The paper.
Paper by 53. Yeah.
That does a nice watercolor effect. From what I remember.
I should go try that. Especially since I also have their Bluetooth stylus, which I hardly ever use. I should charge it up to make sure it still works.
I don't think you actually charge that one. I think that one's just a capacitive.
Oh, no, mine. I have the paper by 53 USB or Bluetooth a stylus. It looks like a giant wooden pencil or something.
See, mine is the same one, but I do not have anywhere to charge it.
Oh, you see the black tip on your pencil?
Yes.
On the writing side? Pull it.
Yes.
Pull it.
Oh, yeah, you're right, it does. Gee, I guess I have not used this thing in so long, because I know I've used it,
yeah.
But I've never actually, maybe I'll charge it, that'll be kind of interesting. Cool.
I taught the doctor something, man. Yeah.
You do have Dr. more experience Westfall. With this doodling than I do.
Yeah, I've taught Dr. Westfall, Professor Westfall, Professor yeah. Doctor.
Something. If we were in Germany, yes.
That's right. Herr Doctor, Herr Professor.
Where compound titles are okay.
Yeah. Okay. You know,
now that I pull that out, I do remember that I had to charge it one time.
Yeah. You've probably been using it. Yeah, you've probably been using it in capacitive mode because the charge died.
Well, a little light has lit up on it, so I'll let it charge.
Okay, so final thoughts. I see you have a final thought on something we discussed last week, I think.
Well, so I've been using this QNAP NAS unit that I bought to replace my Apple Mac Mini server, which then abruptly died after a week of me having the QNAP. So apparently it just felt, threatened and just decided to commit suicide.
Yeah, that's sad. So, always sad.
I've been really interested in, I've kind of taken a modern jump with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But just the fact now that a lot of the things that we really liked cloud services for, if you have one of these things, you can really roll your own. It's right. Got a file manager app that, while it's not as polished as some of the others, it does do like automatic camera backup and things like that from my phone. The VPN setup is OpenVPN, so I've not used that before, but it actually set up really easily. And I've just been pretty happy with it for, a $1,500 setup. When you add the drives in and everything else, It's doing what I would consider it should. I was kind of, I've rolled my own NAS units before, and it's not the have to do all of that and to enjoy the benefits of. And a very good, both Synology and QNAP,
right.
The two players in that space have very good user communities where you can find packages of things. And I've been using Plex for my media serving now. I've been happy with that. So the Mac Mini is gone, not forgotten, but is almost fully replaced.
Hmm.
I mean, this thing going to act as a Windows domain controller if you wanted to.
Wow.
So it's pretty full featured.
So it's really just a headless computer.
It is.
With a big, with storage.
And it doesn't even have to be headless because it has an HDMI out.
Oh, not, wow.
So if you want, you can hook it up to a computer monitor, you can hook it up to a TV.
Right.
And there are apps that actually run in that mode, either a Linux mode or an HD mode.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty impressive. That is impressive. Let's see. Do I have any final thoughts I wanted to add before we sign off? Oh, one thing. For whatever reason, I remember a long time ago, I think it was in high school, my daughter, we bought a TI graphing calculator, the 83 or 84, I don't know what the difference is. And it's like $100-something for this calculator.
Yep.
I paid, $6 for something called Graphen Calc 83 for my iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I can tell, it is a perfect emulation of the TI 83 graphing calculator. And, you say, well, why do you need the graph part? And I didn't really need the graph part, but I did want a really good calculator. And the Apple calculator is nice, and if you turn it sideways, it has scientific-ish things. You can do, square root, and I see log, and exponents, and stuff like that. But it's kind of nice to have a, kind of a traditional-looking calculator. And for $6 or $7, whatever I paid for it, it seems like a good deal. It seems to work real well. I kind of use it as my default calculator. It has a running tape of sorts. Yeah, it has a running tape, not of sorts. It has a running tape, so you can see previous calculations by just scrolling the graphing window, which I thought was really nice. So I don't know if I'll actually use the graphing card, but just as a really smart calculator with a with a rolling tape of things, it works well.
Well, since you are talking calculators,
okay,
it makes me think that I have to tell you, I just won't replace one of these.
What is it? TI or HP? I can't say. Oh, TI 80 something. 89?
Yep, 89. The only calculator you ever need for anything.
Well, I felt like that about the HP 25C for many years, and you have to be pretty old to know what HP 25C was, but it was a tank. And it finally died after about 20 years. I think the battery exploded.
Well, I think the battery in my 89, I just noticed, is probably dead, so I have to replace these out. But it's funny. I had a graphing calculator conversation with a friend of mine this week, and we were talking about, first of all, as many on the internet have started to note, it is quite amazing that HP and principally TI, HP isn't as bad about this, but it's amazing that TI can still make money selling something that is so primitive by computing standards now.
Oh, you know how they do it, right?
Well, yeah, they get in with the education market,
right.
And then that keeps them afloat. But it's still kind of amazing that they worked out that scam.
Personally, but, I have to congratulate TI on keeping essentially a non-essential market quite healthy by brilliant marketing, in my opinion. Convincing, I guess the marketing part, convincing teachers and so forth that this is the best way to do things. And, they may be right, because we will say, well, why would you spend, $100 or whatever in a calculator when you can do it on your phone? But the truth is, not everybody has a smartphone.
Well, and the truth is that once you know how to use a calculator like a TI-89, it's faster than plugging into your phone. In fact, I tell my stats students we don't use 89s, we don't need them, but I have a TI-36 X, I think, is what I tell them to use. And I use it in class. It's faster than even having an app on my phone for specifically teaching stats. So, but the funny thing we were talking about was that she had a memory of being in high school and having a TI-83.
Ooh.
And the 83, at one point her brother lost his. She had to send him his. And she used her dad's TI-89 and flunked a math test almost, because the way that TI's interface between the 83 and 89 differ, you can't use the same learning on one or the other. So kind of an interesting example of even TI, even though they have gotten into the education market, they still have differing standards depending on which one of their products you're using.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, well, one of the things I should notice, I noticed that Prisma Photo Editor, I don't know if you use that one, John, but Prisma Photo Editor has an update specifically to support iOS 11, so I think there's something to dealing with permissions to get access to photos that may or may not be an issue for some apps.
Well, Apple did tighten down some of the permissions settings in iOS 11. So I have seen apps that previously had permission to do what they wanted now asking me more, reprompting for permissions.
Mm. And I noticed that Google Photos update now supports that new HEIF and HEVC photo and video formats in iOS 11.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. A lot of iOS 11 app updates. Okay, you got anything to add, John? I'm pretty much out of stuff to talk about.
I think I'm good. I now have a stylus that has more functionality than I remembered it had, and I'm waxing nostalgic about graphing calculators.
Yeah, if you're wondering what all that clunking was, John was changing the batteries in his calculator.
Yeah, because it's really annoying that it's not working, even though I haven't used it in a year and a half.
Okay, folks, Mobile Views Podcast 223 in the can. Talk to you next time.